Welcome to The Bear and the Ball. I'm your host, Nick Webster, and delighted to welcome to the show today, Carrie Taylor and Liam O'Connor, technical directors for the United Soccer League Girls and Boys Pathway to Absolute Brilliance.
See you, Nick.
So it seems that we have met before, Liam.
Yeah, from back in the Fox Soccer Channel days.
So obviously that tells me that you've been a fan of the beautiful game for a long time. What was your introduction?
Me personally, fall in love with the game as a player. I grew up in Western Massachusetts, about 2 hours from Boston, 3 hours from New York City. Just ended up falling in love with the game as a player, and then I started when I wanted to try to pursue playing as far as I could go. I wanted to obviously learn as much about the game as possible and follow it more. So I started feeling like I wanted to follow the professional game more. MLS was just in its infancy, so I started going to Revolution games and MLS. Really started to follow. I remember it was, I think, the 2004-05 Champions League season was the first time I followed the European game. That was an easy Champions League run to follow along with and get excited by, with that Liverpool AC Milan final in Istanbul. So there was no turning back in terms of being a soccer fan at that point. And then a year later, it was the 2006 World Cup. So for those few years, be my introduction to fandom of soccer. That, needless to say, like, along with my passion as a player, really took me to the next level and made me realize I want to make a career out of the game. And that's where I really started getting into the coaching and administrative side. It's taken me to this role that I'm serving now.
An amazing coincidence. I was actually in Boston for that Champions League final, and I found a bar, and in this bar there was probably 25 TVs, and 25 TVs had the Red Sox on. And I said to this bartender, "Champions League final, you know?" And he's like, "What?" And I said, "No, you've got to let me watch this. I'm not a fan of Liverpool, to be honest, full disclosure, but obviously it's an English team in the Champions League final." So he gave me a TV in the corner, and I'm sitting there watching it on my own. And as we all know, it was one of the most crazy games ever. And I'm screaming and yelling, and I just can't believe what's happening here. And by the end of the full time, there was 10 TVs that had the Champions League. I was like, yes, I've turned them. So, Carrie, tell us your story.
How much time do you have? Because I'm old and I've had a long and windy path. No, I grew up in a great town called Flint, Michigan, and didn't start playing soccer till I was 12. Went to the University of Michigan, and at that time they didn't have a women's varsity college program, so I went and played on the club team and actually was integral in the group of women that helped get the first ever women's NCAA team at the University of Michigan in the fall of 94. And throughout that time, I was actually had the opportunity to be coached by two women who were on the 1991 World Cup team, Debbie Belkin and Linda Hamilton. So I had great mentors, and at that time in college, I had gone through and started my coaching licenses. And so upon graduation, I had to call my dad and say, "Hey, Dad, I'm not going to medical school. I'm going to be a soccer coach." And now he supports it, but my career from club to college to youth directors to working with the Jamaican women's national team, being the first female assistant with a USL men's championship team, it's been a crazy career. And I kind of got out of soccer for a while, but I'm back at the USL because you can't run away from your passion. Yeah, and I spent a lot of time in Cal South along my journey. Did ODP, was a youth director. My heart's probably still in California, even though we have lovely weather in Tampa. So yeah, I love the game. Been in it a long time, and it's just exciting to see the growth, especially on the women's side, because, you know, back the first, you know, World Cup champions, not many people knew about it. It wasn't on TV. They had no one at the airport, and to see the growth of the women's game at all the levels in my lifetime has been phenomenal.
Yeah, I can definitely attest to that. 91 team, and a quick story for you guys, and you'll get a laugh out of this. In 93, I was taking my A license in Santa Clara, and the A license field was over here, and then there was a B license course going on in the other field, and there was always a coach's game. And I'm glancing over, and I'm looking at this game, and there's about to be a free kick being taken, and this blonde lady's stepping up, and I'm like, why are they letting a lady take the free kick? Because it's all guys. She's the only lady out there. And bends it in the top corner. I was like, oh, my God, what's this? And so at lunchtime, I went over to introduce myself, Brandi Chastain. And we're still friends to this day from that moment. So it was really very cool. And to see, to your point, how the women's game has grown is completely unbelievable. So Liam, talk to us about how this academy is flourishing, because I'm a huge fan of USL and can't wait to see it become the Premier League in the country. But how's the academy progressing, and how do people, especially here on the West Coast, get involved in the USL Academy program?
Yeah, it's a really good question and good timing.
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
Yeah, good timing, to be honest, Nick, because this is officially a PSA to the soccer people in Southern California. We will be significantly increasing USL's presence in Southern California and in the West Coast altogether. Quite a bit in the next 1 to 3 years especially. So I would say if there's anyone listening to this that wants to learn more, please contact us directly. We'll probably drop that info towards the end of the podcast today. But Carrie and I would gladly take calls from anyone that's interested in learning about how can you get your club or your community and your players involved in USL. The key, Nick, to that answer of specifically how do I get my youth club in USL Academy is an important one to ask, because this is not a traditional youth league or youth soccer platform. It's a pathway-based program. So we're only going to open up an opportunity for a USL Academy program or membership if it's ultimately going to be pointing that boys or girls player pool to a local men's or women's senior team. When we use that term senior team, I think this is about aligning the idea of academies with how you see it where you grew up and around the rest of the world, right? Where an academy is basically a vocational school that's a direct stepping stone into men's and women's adult soccer. We use the term senior team soccer because these are the first teams, the senior teams of these clubs and of these pathways that we're building. And I think it's important that these young boys and girls feel like there is this North Star, this senior team that they can aspire towards, be inspired by, and also look to emulate, right? And it makes those stepping stones for their dream, I think, a little bit clearer and more attainable. So in saying that, yeah, that's the big thing, is if a club wants to be in USL Academy, we just got to explore, okay, how do we go about building a pathway to an amateur or maybe even professional men's or women's team? That could be an existing group like Orange County, or it could be a brand new group. So some of the conversations we're already having with clubs in Southern California are really exciting, because you'll see some of them announced in actually the USL Academy Boys League this summer or this year, and that's actually in anticipation of bigger conversations that have been ongoing for some time, and the goal of bringing men's or women's professional soccer to those communities, which is what we're really, really passionate about in our roles.
So when we look at the youth scene, it's a mess. And then let's be honest, there's so many competing organizations, and, you know, I put that down to the Federation, but that's another discussion for another day. How do you stand out from all the competition without diluting what's happening around the elite levels of youth soccer?
I think you should comment on this, because this has been our MO for the past few weeks, is quality over quantity, right?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. It's quality over quantity, and it's currently as it stands, it's an and, not an or. So, like, clubs can do at the youth space what play within all the different acronyms, and we can supplement by adding to the experience of those higher performing players. So, like, more fluid rosters, and if you think about it, you know, like, he used Orange County as an example. On the men's side and the boys' side, it's like a reserve team for the first team. That's how you can utilize it. And there's different roster rules and age breakdowns and things like that. So it's taking the lens of, like, we want to support and be a supplement to what you're already doing, and we're not looking to include teams just to build. It needs to be intentional, and that's why it has to be connected to a senior team. And, you know, the boys' side has kind of a little bit of a head start. The girls' side is going, and I think with the introduction of the USL Women's Super League, now we can start connecting the pathway a little bit better on the girls' and women's sides.
So as technical directors, what are your roles within the organization, and how do you present yourself to different clubs and organizations?
I think the easiest way to describe it is, as the sporting department, we're driving player, coach, and youth development initiatives, right? Both from a league level, in terms of, like, what are these roster rules that we create for the USL Academy League that we feel will accelerate the development of our youngest high-potential players? Or, I think, and then on the other side, I think it's about, like, serving as consultants in many ways. Right, so it's because we've been in the shoes of some of our counterparts at clubs, we can really help them in their roles in building these pathways. So our clients at the club level are typically either your, like, coaches, technical directors, sporting directors, or academy directors, and then obviously their senior leadership, presidents, GMs, owners, and really making sure that everyone along that vertical is aligned in, okay, how do we want this senior team, this pro club, this brand to exist within the existing youth soccer community? Because I think that's, to Carrie's point of us being complementary in our strategy and not just being a takeover mentality, every one of these communities on the map already have youth soccer. And to your point, probably more than they need. So we want to make sure that we're additive to that, ultimately.
So here's a tough political question for you. When we look at USL and MLS academies, we are looking at the elite players. One of the things that I've kind of noticed in my 35 years in the US, everybody's an elite player. How do you navigate that explosive question and not lose players because their parents go, oh, my kid's no longer the best? Because if we're honest, 95% of players should be recreational players, and five, probably less, are going to be elite.
I got a few thoughts. Do you want to start anywhere?
Yeah, I think from my perspective on the girl side, A is, you know, we're kind of internally going through our player pools and doing player tracking and going, okay, you know, who's in our W League? Who's in our Academy League? Where are they playing? Who's on the U.S. youth national teams? Who's on the Jamaican national teams? Who's on the Haitian national teams? Looking at, you know, from a larger perspective, where are all the college graduates going? Are they going overseas? Are they getting drafted by the NWSL? Are they going to land with our Super League teams? And actually analyzing and getting feedback from the clubs, like, as games are happening. Hey, who are your top two players? Or who are you playing against? Send us, you know, we have a form. Hey, send us the top players that you've seen this month. You know, and actually tracking so that we're identifying within our ecosystem who are those elite players and figuring out values when they get to the professional level and things like that. So, you know, having expertise from ourselves, from our sporting director, Oliver Weiss, like, how can we, A, make sure that we know who's in our ecosystem, and B, how can we help coaches identify those players? You know, part of our job right now is when we're bringing new clubs into the academy, we have them send us their sporting strategic plan. And we've asked for a depth chart. You know, send us your top players at these age groups. How are you going to recruit players? How are you going to manage your roster? So really trying to not micromanage, but assist clubs in the whole process, whether it's identifying new coaches to hire, new, you know, where to find the key players, how to create relationships if they don't necessarily have a professional team in their area. How can we facilitate those relationships with a professional team in your area? So if you have a top player, how can you, you know, call that head coach and say, hey, I've got a great prospect for you, and bridging those relationships. And it's you know, the men's side is ahead. It's going to take some more time on the women's side, but you know, we think on it daily. We try to go through it daily on how can we help support our membership better. So,
and I think, Nick, too, it's also like from a league level, there are ways that we can actually force clubs to go through that process you just said of being a little bit more honest about truly what is the elite level and who's honestly on that pathway. So, because what's key is, like, it's technically the Academy League is a U20 league, but we call it a modified U20 team because we're the only, to my knowledge, still the only competition in American soccer where we are requiring a minimum number of young players get promoted out of their age group and up a few birth years. So, like, this year, 2005 is the youth cutoff that we consider for the U20 team for the whole year. We require every club fielding U20 team has at least six 2007s included in that master roster. And we highly encourage that they're using this depth chart to not just look at who are the best 20 players that can win me a U20 game today. It's who are the highest potential U20 players in our player pool, in our pathway. And it means that, yes, at some point, you're taking the first best U17 player over the 12th best U19 player. And that's, again, very intentional of why we're doing that, you know?
Talk to me about standards and the standards that clubs need to demonstrate to you to become an academy program within USL.
Yeah, so like the process Carrie mentioned, so we've got, and huge credit to the DA. I know it wasn't exactly the best timing of the DA's demise during the pandemic and left the landscape kind of in a bit of a lurch, but I think what U.S. Soccer, give them credit, what they got right with the DA was a focus on standards and actually auditing said standards, because enough people put out standards, but it doesn't mean that they actually enforce or audit or police them or consult their clubs on elevating those standards. So we have a very extensive process. It includes three different departments within our league office. Every club is audited on an annual basis. Those standards vary through our platforms and levels, right? So in Academy, the standards are much more focused on your training environment, your depth chart, how you're assessing the individual development plans of these high potential youngsters and when to progress them up or down that pathway and in and out of their comfort zone. And obviously a little, whereas as you get into like the amateur senior team space, League 2W, it starts getting more into like match day presentation standards. This is semi-professional football. We're really preparing these players for their final jump to the professional ranks. And then obviously the pros is an entirely different level, right? That's where we're in big stadiums. We're on TV all the time. It's being broadcast internationally. You got players coming from all over the globe representing their national teams as that level continues to increase. So, yeah, needless to say, that is a very, very, I think, core component to how we operate. I don't know if there's anything you want to add to just how we view standards, but
ever-evolving.
Yeah, that's
ever-evolving. It goes back to the quality over quantity, where we're at, you know, within on the women's side with the the new iteration of the Super League, and the W League's going into its third year, and the Girls Academy is now in its second season. You know, now that it's sustainable, now we can even drive the standards higher and require more. And, you know, the USL is good at what it does, but we can always get better in assessing the standards of who we allow in, how we grow intentionally on all of our platforms as a league. So it's ever evolving.
America is such a massive country. How do you administrate something as big as this when we think that, you know, Europe is so refined within their football development, soccer development? How do you go about managing that?
Figuring that one out in real time.
Ever evolving, just like.
No, it's honestly, it's one of the biggest challenges of where USL is at when you talk about working and driving this growth. Is like, everyone wants a piece of USL, which is awesome. It means we're doing something right. I don't think there's any soccer entity that's experienced this much growth through the past 5 years, and especially a global pandemic, right? Like, and there's a lot more growth to come, and I think we all know that, especially with a lot of the international tournaments coming to the States in the coming years. There's a lot of appetite to invest in the growing game, especially at the professional level within the women's game. You look at the communities that we're getting into with USL. They're very different communities that for a long time have been on the outside looking in of American soccer. And so the good news is, with that interest and expansion does come more resources for our league office. Our leadership understands that to navigate these growing pains, we need to staff up and we need to add resources. And so I joined 5 years ago, right after the rebrand to Championship League One and League Two, and right before League One actually took off. And I was like employee number 50. We're over 100 now. And most of that growth has come in the last 2 years, and there's more to come. I mean, I think yesterday we posted two jobs, like just yesterday. So that's the key. And then I think the most important piece, though, is regardless of how many bodies we get in the league office, it's about the relationship and the connection that we have with each individual club and with our counterparts there, and them feeling like they can trust us and they can work with us and that we're in their corner, you know.
I'm now going to give you the hot potato, and I can't wait to see the two of you juggle it between the two of you. Relationship and alignment and competition between MLS Next, USL Academy, UPSL, which in my view are the three preeminent developmental pathways for kids to make it to the next level.
On the men's and boys' side, I would wholeheartedly agree. And there's a similar dynamic that's kind of unfolding since we've launched W League on the women's side, too. And I think League 2 is also in the conversation on the men's side with a lot of our League 2 clubs in the summer, using that as their premier amateur space as they kind of shoulder an NPSL or UPSL either side. And like you said, there's a reason why almost 50% of the MLS clubs now are also fielding a team in UPSL currently. In an idealistic, I just want American soccer to succeed mode. Yeah, I do hope we can find a way to kind of bring some of these groups together. But at the same time, those are vastly different models, right? And I think the good news about how we've again positioned ourselves, controlling what we can, is like Carrie said, we're agnostic to the landscape. We've got some clubs that also compete in New Mexico United is a great example of like, they're still very remote. We're so excited and happy. We've been building a men's pathway and soon a women's pathway in that community. But like we're not going to exacerbate their travel demand, forcing them to go out of state for every single USL Academy game just because it's got our green sticker. So if they can get meaningful games in state against UPSL opponents, which they are currently, great, we'll applaud that. Just like clubs like Sacramento Republic choose to be an MLS Next at the youth level, whereas Louisville City chooses to be an ECNL. that's their that club and their decision to make based on their community, their travel demand, their player pool. I don't know. Would you add anything to that?
I would just add it goes back to your earlier question of, like, the U.S. is so big in comparison to what's going on in Europe that we're trying to meet our teams and clubs where they're at and do what makes sense. So, you know, we've looked at our strategic footprint and how can we add on the women's side to existing programs that are already in existence on the men's side. And it goes back to, again, the relationships of what are the needs and wants of the club? Does our model fit a particular city and ecosystem? You know, does someone want to get in and be an early adopter? And then the competition in that market then pushes other clubs to us. It's there's so many different things, and that's what I'm learning. Liam's been here 5 years. I got here in July and helped with the Super League initially, and now I'm, you know, learning all of this on the women's side, and like the plethora of like relationship building that he's done in the past 5 years is like amazing. And you know, that's what it boils down to. Do you want to be with someone that you trust and that makes sense for your team? That's great. Like, whether you're with us or with another, with UPSL or MLS Next or whatever, like, it's okay. There's enough soccer for everyone, and we just want to focus on what we deliver to our teams and our clubs and our players and our coaches, and that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, and just, like, to tie a bow on that, that's, again, back to quality over quantity, to the point of the New Mexico example. They may be participating in UPSL, but guess what? That's helping a player like Christian Nava, their first homegrown signing, academy signing. Like, that helped give him some additional games at a critical point in his development. And guess what? He still progressed up the USL pathway for New Mexico. So, like, I'll actually pat UPSL on the back for that one. Like, I'm not, especially if it saved them some money and allowed them to focus those resources towards the development of him and those other players instead of just another night in a hotel or a more expensive flight for a game, you know?
You mentioned the early adopter. So here's your moment for your PSA, Liam. When and how can we expect you here in Southern California?
Well, you missed me in Anaheim if you didn't already get on the agenda. We were both in Anaheim for the convention, the United Soccer Coaches Convention, just a little while ago. But I would say definitely feel free to shoot us an email. So liam.oconnell@uslsoccer.com or carrie.taylor@uslsoccer.com. You can also go to usl-academy.com. There's spots there where you can either reach out to us direct or where you can fill out a little info form just to learn more, and us or one of our staff members will reach back out to you. I would just ask when clubs or interested parties reach out, the more info you guys can provide us about your club and your community and the vision that you have. What's that why? Why do you want to bring USL to your community? If it's just to have a new acronym to sell your pay-to-play programming, we probably won't take the conversation too far. But if you believe in building vertically integrated pathways that will help boys and girls aspire and feel like they have a clear path to realize their dream of maximizing their potential as an individual player, now we got something to talk about. And now we just got to decide about standards and strat plans and timelines. Because the sooner that you get to the table with us, the greater likelihood you have of being at the table when this starts to become a little bit more real. But like I said, you'll see an expansion actually within the next couple hours. We may be putting out a pretty big press release about our 2024 Academy League membership and the expansion you'll see on the boys and girls sides, including some unique expansion in the Southwest, SoCal included. And I can tell you that expansion will continue, and many conversations are already ongoing. So the sooner you get to us, the better likelihood that you'll be here next year.
Carrie Taylor, Liam O'Connell, masterminds of USL. And for more on Cal South, please visit us at calsouth.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm your host, Nick Webster, and we'll catch you next time on The Bear and the Ball.